Blog Talk Radio.
Are we live?
Situation got called the no contest.
I was in some of the local papers yesterday and today, so I got to see that. And now it looks like the WBC mandating a rematch between Hopkins and Boston. And I was obviously reading some of John Scully's Facebook posts because he, was Dawson's trainer for that fight. And he's obviously been with Chad for a long time. And he was wondering if Hopkins will relinquish the title just to avoid Dawson and fight someone else.
I don't know. I think, why not? Better settle it. There should be some money to pay for, a do-over. We'll see. But back to the Khan fight. Actually, Amir Khan knocked Peterson down in the first round. He also had a slip, and he comes back from that and ends up... Actually, there were a few people who scored the fight a draw, I guess. Some press people, but... most of the people were the experts, and at least one of the judges had their crown ahead, despite points taken off. So that should tell you something. It'd be one thing if there were no points taken off, it was controversial. He got 2 points taken away, and a couple of people got ties, and everybody else has their crown winning pretty much. And plus, it's obviously a situation where Peterson is really fighting in his hometown. He was homeless when it became his hometown. Him and his brother were taken in by a guy who trained them and got them into boxing. And so they're like a huge moral victory story as well as a boxing story. And both of the brothers fought on the card and hit the brother one. Pretty interesting, to say the least. I don't know if it's corruption per se, but favoritism, definitely, I think, just with the ref, the way the ref is concerned. I don't know about the judges, but who knows. I do want to watch it, though. It's seven. You can find a free version online. But it sounds like it could have been a fight of the year candidate. Obviously, impressed a lot of people, whether it was controversial or not, just the way he fought. He doesn't usually fight like a brawler, and he went in there and brawled. One of the, arguably the best guy at that point. Unreal. And Robert Guerrero is out there, too, banging the drum for the fight with Floyd Mayweather, especially now that Jack Allen had that loss. Was saying either Mayweather or Khan, but now he's all about fighting Mayweather.
That's a good question.
Basically, he's saying now, actually, there's somebody from Golden Boy said that because if Pacquiao doesn't happen, we'll sign to fight Guerrero. So we'll see.
In my usual opinion. No. It looks like they reserve the data made them for a Mayweather fight. I mean, that's not the perfect opportunity for a fighter, for him to take all the fight of Mexican heritage, whether that be someone like Guerrero, speaking of Mayo, that's the weekend that he bought them a win a few years ago. He came to the ring, wearing a sombrero, which was pretty entertaining. It could be said they fight in a place like Las Vegas, maybe even California, that's a place with a heavy Mexican population. It's going to bring in a lot of money.
Mucho dinero.
I mean, this is a joke, but maybe a rematch of Victor Ortiz. That was a joke.
Wow. I don't know. Anybody likes to pick up Mexicans. I don't think he's going to be successful. Guerrero, though. I guess Guerrero's going to claim that he's figured him out, too. And he's an incredible story, too, with his quit boxing. With his wife sick.
Well, yeah. Rich, I wanted to talk about a few things coming up in the world of boxing on the the local side of it, the Philadelphia side of it. I used to be very good at hiding Christmas gifts. I could, you know, fool people and do all that fancy shit, and really surprise people with gifts. Like, I tripped to Boston a few years ago. That was a surprise for my dad. Basically, what I did this year was I was talking to him and said, hey, man, you know, the Versus Network is starting to carry fights now. Boxing. They're going to do 6 cards in 2012. First one's going to be coming up from the Asylum in Philadelphia, which is formerly known as the New Alhambra. And, you know, it's going to be January 21st. Eddie Chambers is fighting on the card, a couple other good fights in the card. And basically, I pretty much told him what the Christmas gift is. I'm going to try to get his front row seats, which for me is usually isn't a problem, you know, when I can try to pull my press on, you know, good ass. What's pretty cool about it was I was talking to the female promoter that we were trying to get on the show, Brittany Rogers, because I had talked to her last week when we hadn't had a guest yet, and I was asking her availability for tonight. She's in Vegas right now, and I sent her the podcast of the show a few months ago when I recapped her first boxing show. So she was really impressed, really liked the way we did our format, and she is going to be on the show. So I asked her if she was going to be down there on the 21st. She's helping put the card together. So I can use her as a, good, chip to get good seats and, the royal chicken as I like to get the pie. What?
So have you sitting in the ring?
Hey, they might have me sitting in the ring. I was joking around with my one colleague today. We have a new boss at my job. I was telling you last week. And the first thing he found out that I'm a fight guy, fired up. And every day I come in there and he just, he's like asking me about fighters from like 80s and shit. And everybody's like, even though I was, he's still impressed with my knowledge and everybody. And I told him, I said, dude, they call me the Rain Man of boxing for a reason. And we were, bullshitting and everything. And I was telling him about the email I got a week ago. And I said, I was hoping he wasn't going to ask for a rematch. I said, that fight was painful enough the first time. My thing was, I had like 30 sanctioned fights. I showed the Naval Academy, they went out of my path, it counted more like sparring matches, my exhibition. I had an exhibition or two up in New York. I had a couple of them there. I had exhibition training sessions at the prison, which they kind of sucked. So, I had a lot more than my 30 fights entailed.
All right, well, I know you don't like talking about mixed martial arts, but I know you do love to bash people with you, so.
I love it.
I think you're going to be able to get in on this story and have a little fun at the expense, in defense, of Dana White. This story came in this week, and I had to talk about it because you're being free speech and all. Miguel Torres, we talk about Dana White, always throw him for one reason or another, and sometimes for not throwing people out compared to other people he has thrown out. But this week, story came through. He threw out a guy for a fucking tweet.
That's right,
a tweet. One tweet. And basically, he's on some show up in Canada where Dana White was. And he says, there's no explanation for that. Simply told, illustrated. There's nothing I could make any sense of that. And the fact that that's really bothers me. Again, you're dealing with a guy that's a smart guy that owns his own business, that's been one of the top fighters in the world forever. And I cut him today. He's no longer with you. Basically, Forrest Griffin actually was busted recently for a bad tweet too, but not thrown out. And Griffin, I guess, tweeted a rapist and a missionary. Really?
Where do you live? What business are you in? How do you not hear about these things?
Anyway. Basically, Torres supposedly was quoting some sort of media, some hot TV show or whatever. And this is the actual tweet. He says, if a rape van was called a surprise van, more women wouldn't mind going for rides than everyone in bikers. And it's obviously supposed to be funny. It's not meant to be taken seriously. Obviously, it's contains a sensitive subject. So people are going to get offended. But to throw a guy out for a tweet out of the UFC, based on no issues with performance, something he's just doing in his side time. That's ridiculous. Fine, maybe like the NFL would fine guys for tweets, but throw them out? You know, can you imagine Michael Vick saying something stupid on a tweet and getting thrown out of the NFL? It's not going to happen.
I mean, it's such a tough. But listen to this, man. It's in baseball, football, basketball, the major sanctioned sport where there is a players association. I mean, first of all, it's going to be fine, Michael Vick, you know, for doing the tweet, you know, saying, hey, you know, Roger Goodell really screwed something up, blah, 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 I'm pissed off about it. Well, yeah, he's like, you're fine, but that players association is going to appeal that and try to fight him in the ass. If they had a players or a quote-unquote fighters association in the UFC, I mean, they would actually really, really damage Dana White. Imagine if fighters got together and set up a union where they were like, okay, Dana can't get a fighter out for whatever reason. Dana can't do that. He would never want to see that happen.
Just for joining.
I remember reading about this back 21 years ago, when the WWF was really starting to boom. They had people getting ready for the second WrestleMania, and they were becoming a national powerhouse. And Jesse Ventura, they could get the union on. And then it'll be Hulk Hogan was the one that stooged them out to a Vince McMahon. And basically, so like a unionized, organization of wrestling would have been, you know, very detrimental to Vince McMahon. He wouldn't have a fucking goal. I mean, Vince McMahon basically right now is like Dana White. He runs his organization. He can blackball wrestlers. He can kick guys out. But that's for entertainment. And some of these guys that, you know, don't make it in the WWE. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Now we
Hello? Can. Okay, I mean, you didn't hear any of my rant on UFC?
Oh, we didn't. We cut out and we came back. I had to call you back a couple times there for a second.
What was I talking about when I cut out? Was I talking about Vince McMahon or was I talking about...
We're just getting into Vince McMahon.
Okay.
Vince
McMahon is basically, him and Dana White are very similar. They both, you know, run the biggest organization. Professional wrestling, you know, like mixed martial arts, and people talk about it a lot of times, they talk about, hey, I want to fight UFC. No, you want to fight mixed martial arts. That's where really the profession is. When people talk about, you know, professional wrestling, they're like, hey, I want to wrestle WWE. No, you want to be a professional wrestler. But the, obviously the biggest, you know, organization out there, professional wrestling, professional wrestling, WWE, mixed martial arts, UFC. And this man is kind of like Dana White. You know, there's guys he's blackballed, there's guys he's thrown out, guys that he would never let back in because of personal issues or fallings out. And, you know, and that, you know, obviously you can make the most money with his organization. So they're kind of very similar right there. So it's like in boxing, it's like, yeah, you might have a falling out with Don King, and he might, you know, cut ties with a professional boxer, and you can still fight for that WBA, WBC, Ring Magazine title, you can still fight the same guys. And, you know, in UFC or even WWE, it's not really that case, which in a way is a shame. So that's kind of what I was talking about there. I think the only real difference is, granted, both of them are very risky professions. At least on the WWE side, it is more of entertainment, where even though the risks are very real, the outcomes are more scripted. You know, with obviously UFC, that is, you know, legitimate fighting, and, you know, careers tend not to be as long. So that was kind of the rambling point that I had been making there.
Alrighty. Yeah, well, you know, you made a good point earlier about the players being used. So the UFC probably not tolerates fighters going into a union. And unfortunately, there's so many different organizations. I mean, it's getting even worse than boxing now with their different sanctioning organizations. But in MMA, you have literally from, I mean, it's an organization. You know, this fight league, that fight league, and different countries have their own organizations. You know, so it's hard to organize that many people under one banner. And the UFC would definitely be the one company that would fight it tooth and nail. Because they run it with the kind of iron fist that would not tolerate it. Not get along well if there was a union and they had to deal with it. Then you have the Fertittas along their station casinos. They're having trouble with the freaking culinary here. The people that cook and run the restaurants. It's tough. So they would have a huge problem with the fighters. It's definitely something that I think, maybe not as far as a union, but I think there should be some sort of association that gets in there.
Well, but that was one thing, you know, I was talking about, you know, before we kind of got cut off. I was reading in a book about 20 or so years ago, I guess about 25 years now. I think it was right around the time of WrestleMania 2. You know, WWF at the time was breaking into finally becoming a big-time powerhouse and, you know, national exposure. And Jesse Ventura, you know, was talking about unionizing the talent, you know. And Hulk Hogan ended up stooging him out to Vince McMahon. And Jesse Ventura's rationale was, you know, at the time, like, Hulk Hogan was getting paid, like, an exorbitant amount more than everybody else was. You know, he was the big cash cow. I think the only guy that was potentially making just as much, if not more, than him was Andre the Giant. You know, Jesse Ventura had... What?
Have you heard the latest on Hulk, by the way?
No, but let's get that in a second. One thing they were saying was you know, just to mature one of them. He came out and said, you know, if we have talent unionized, there's going to be no WrestleMania if they don't have, I think it was WrestleMania King Kong Bundy. If, you know, Bundy's unionized, they can't have WrestleMania with just Hogan. They need an opponent for him. And, man, like, but I can see why, you know, unionized wrestling talent, you know, would kind of, you know, really put it into monopoly. And I could see,
I imagine, think, well, it's not a folding chair.
Right. Well, imagine if all the fighters, all the mixed martial artists out there unionized against Dana White, where he couldn't kick guys out, where he couldn't, you know, levy all, like, these fines and, you know, punishments and everything against these guys. And he had to pay them a certain amount and stuff like that. Well, imagine how much that would dagger into him.
Even though I don't have the website DanaWhiteSucks.com, and not of White. But it's kind of funny. I started the show off with the Brady Bunch parody, the UFC Bunch, and you know a lot of people forget that's the story. It's kind of a simple way of putting it, but that's really the real story right there. You know, Dana White just bumped into his old buddies and said, "Give me some money." And that's how they, you know, got involved at the very beginning. But then somewhere along the way, somebody just crowned Dana White the king of everything MMA, when he didn't really do much other than, you know, flap his gums. They put up all the money. You know, they did the grunt work. And that's the basic story. That's how it breaks down. So many people forget that. They act like Dana White invented MMA. That, because you treat people like that, you throw them out because of a freaking tweet, and you can get away with it. I mean, that's nothing to be proud of. But, hey, sometimes we don't live in a free country. At least when you fight under a Dana White. But that's enough flogging of the father for now. We do have to get to our guest on in a few minutes here, but I did want to mention there's some news on Hulk Hogan. His wife, I guess, wrote this horrendous book, as far as he's concerned, about her experiences, his ex-wife, with the Hulk. And now he's suing her for defamation, because some of the things in this book are pretty bad, I guess. Namely, supposedly she wrote in there that gay affair with Bruce the Barber Beefcake. Talk about a fucked up scripted wrestling story. Oh, I read that and I was like, yeah, right. But, hey, anything's possible, I guess. I kind of
read
the quote from the Breakfast Club where the tough guy is talking to the wrestler across the room and he's like, you know, you wrestle, you roll around on the floor with other guys in tights. But, hey, she's written this big book. It's getting a lot of press, and Jason looks bad, so he's not going to take it. She's going to have to prove that it happened to win the case, and that'll be really...
That was a very bitter divorce between Hulk Hogan and his wife, Linda. And honestly, any accusation that either party makes or the other does not surprise me. I think what ended up really putting it, you know, a devastating blow to their marriage was that reality show that they were doing about 5-6 years ago when they were following them around and this and that. Hogan Knows Best, because that was, I guess, really showing like the inner workings of the family. And I think I put too much of a spotlight on them than when we had the car accident with his son. Now, a lot of people originally thought their divorce was a ploy where, say his wife Linda got half. Now, Hulk Hogan was worth millions. I don't want to speculate how many, but he's worth millions. So if she gets half and then he gets sued, well, it's basically say he's got $25 or $50 million. And she gets $25 of those million, then Hogan gets sued and loses his $25 million. Well, they're still resting on $25 million. where if he gets sued for everything, and they're still married, he could potentially lose all of it. So, but that has been a couple of years since that accident, so it looks more and more like the divorce was not a ploy, and there's some general, you know, animosity there.
From a reality show into a real-life soap opera.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have Tony Luis waiting in the wings here. Undefeated pro boxer. I believe he's 13
and a half. How do you spell his last
name? L-U-I-S.
Hello?
Hi, Tony. Tony?
Yes.
Can you hear us?
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, can you do me a favor? Can you call me back on a different number?
Sure.
I'll give you the number right now. Same area code, 613.
Hold on.
Okay. Because you'll have an easier time hearing me on this other number, that's why.
Okay. Go ahead. I got the area.
So, 613-933-5618.
Okay.
Hello?
Alrighty, folks, we're dealing with a little connection issue. I'm just going to work around this here for a second. I guess I could tell you a little bit more about the Johnny Bones Jones fight. UFC 140 card. We're going to get to that after talk to Tony here. But basically, Chita was dominating the whole first round. He had a lot of striking. He's moved really well. He's kind of flinching here and there, bumping and weaving, fading a lot, and just would move in at just the right moments with a few strikes just for the point's sake, and, you know, getting the just on his side, I think. Every time Jones seemed to wind up with something, he did pop. Less than a minute to go in the round, he just closed in and got him against the cage and hit this standing guillotine with a little bit of a twist on it. He put his hand in a different position and choked him out right up against the cage, so it was almost as brutal as a knockout because you couldn't really see Machida's face, and his arms just went limp. He didn't tap out, he just passed out. So he just kind of passed out, and then Jones threw him off, and he just crumpled in a heap on the floor. So it was pretty exciting. And in the co-main event there, we had Frank Mir break the arm of one of the repair brothers there. Yeah, that's pretty good. And I saw the x-ray, too, in that story. And it's a pretty nasty break right in the middle of the arm. Not going to be fun to be on the sideline dealing with that. O'Gara.
Hello?
Tony.
Yes.
How can you hear?
How's it going?
Better?
Yeah, that's a little bit better.
All right. Great. It's going good. Tell us a little bit about how you get into boxing.
Oh, well, I was karate when I was... What's that?
How'd you get into boxing?
You know why? Because I'm hearing my echo. I'm getting confused.
Just on a speakerphone.
But yeah, I was when I was a kid. When I was maybe 7 years old, right up until I was 11 or 12. Then my dad got teaching boxing at a local fitness club. And I just started tagging along. And then I found a bunch of old classic fight tapes that he had in his basement on his court. And I had to make a choice at a certain point, karate or boxing, and I chose boxing, and from there I just never looked back.
Okay. So did you ever turn around and try karate, I guess, later on? Did you end up in MMA or what?
No, I never went back to karate after that. I got a couple friends in town that run an MMA gym, and one of them is pro and everything, and he's got a few good amateurs. And now and then, I go and teach some boxing classes there, and I spar with the guys, and I'll fool around and grapple and that, you know. And I do all right. Like, I enjoy the sport as a fan, and I like grappling now and then, but boxing's my passion. Boxing is what got to my heart. So that's that.
Tony, I'm looking at your record. I pulled it up on BoxRec, and I see familiar names. But the one fighter I wanted to talk to you about, we fought him just about a year ago. By the name of Aldo Barriera up at the Bell Center in Montreal, Canada. I've covered Aldo a few times. I've seen him fight in Philadelphia. A good day, a friend of mine took him tooth and nail. Tell me, was that not one of the toughest chins you've ever had to hit?
Aldo Valpierre, who did you see him fight?
I've seen him fight a very good friend of mine in Philadelphia, a guy by the name of Rogers Matagua.
Rogers Matagua.
Yes, Rogers, actually, I've known since he came to the States in 2000. We used to train together when he was first coming to the United States, when the only words he knew were hello, goodbye, and bathroom. I looked at him. I sat in front row and took the fight with Valtierra.
Oh, okay. I fought Valtierra, actually, before I fought him. And that's what I said, too. I said, this guy's tough, but I figured he's going to be fairly straightforward and not hard to figure out. But it ended up being, I personally thought I won at least 6 out of 8 rounds, but every round was, the first couple rounds, it was no problem, and he got rocked pretty good with the left hook in the second, and he buckled, and from there it turned into a wrestling match. You know, every little trick in the book to try to nullify my offense, you know, a lot of holding and hitting and just little things on the inside. You know, he was a pro's pro, but on top of the fact that he had a good chin too, so that was a good developmental fight for me. I learned a lot from that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Valtierra is a guy, you know, he doesn't have the greatest record in the world, but he's a guy, when you fight him, you got to pack a lunch. I mean, he's going to give you an honest effort. He reminds me almost a little of a margarita. You're right, he's not the fastest guy in the world. He's not flashy, but he's very much a straightforward fighter, very tall type of guy, and who offers mainly his chin. So he offers his chin as his first defense, and hopefully by you standing there to tee off on him, you'll leave yourself there long enough for him to get you back.
That's pretty much just it. He's not looking to, he's not a very busy, active fighter, but he's a guy that's always, like you said, he can go around. He knows how to pace himself and get you, he knows how to slow down the pace so that he can go distance and get you out again. He's a veteran, you know, and that's what veterans do. So, yeah, no, exactly. That's, we're talking about the same guy for sure.
Right.
And what would you say is the toughest guy you ever fought so far in the world?
I'd say as a pro, I think the toughest guy I fought was in terms of, I'm going to base it on Adrian Verdugo. I fought him on the undercard of the Chad Dawson, Jean Pascal card at Bell Center, and he had a winning record coming in, and he was young. We were roughly around the same age. He's not much older than me. So based on youth and youth ability, energy, all that, I'd say Verdugo was probably the most quality guy that I fought on paper. He went on to have a war with Logan McGuinness, another fellow contender here in Canada. He's got a North American title. And he also he fought Jorge Linares not that long ago. He went 7 or 8 rounds, and he gave Linares you know, gave as good as he got for at least the first 5-6 rounds anyway until Linares won down. But that was a good notch on my belt that fight. We just outboxed him all night. Just outboxed him and stayed away, outfought him on the inside when we had to, and just you know, just boxed a smart fight. But he was another guy. Fought Adrian Valdez on, that was on ESPN, and we stopped him in the fifth round. But he was a southpaw. He had fought a couple main guys. He went 12 rounds with Ben Aydın before, and another guy, I can't think of him now off the top of my head, but first southpaw that I ran into as a pro. Slick, good big left hand, and everything, and we adjusted, we found a way to win. But those are all, like, those fights, Verdugo, Valdez, and Valtier and all that, those are all fights that, you know, all learning experiences, and, you know, helped develop me, you know, turn me into a legitimate pro.
Cool. And nowadays, what would you say is the most important to get ready?
What would be the closest what?
What's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight these days?
Oh, I can't give you a black and white answer to that. I think everything factors in to preparation. What you're doing outside the gym is what you're doing inside the gym. Obviously, the boxing work, the running, the strength training, the lifestyle in general, you know, it doesn't turn off once you're out of the gym. You got to be eating right. You can't be going out on the weekends and living a life. And when you're in training for a fight and you're in those last final weeks, you have to live like a Spartan in and out of the gym, twice a day, you know, 5-6 days a week.
All right. Enjoy most about being involved in boxing?
Just, you know, what's that?
What do you enjoy most about just being involved in the sport of boxing?
Oh, just fighting itself. I love fighting, and it's in a structured environment where I'm not getting in trouble for it, you know. I'm enjoying what I love, a passion of mine that I get to make a living off of. And it's the training, the prep and everything, and going out there, it's an individual sport. And, you know, all the lights are on you, and it's always a tough 22 because you're either gonna get all the glory or if you lose, you know, and you find out who your real friends are. You know, but I've learned a lot about myself being in boxing, you know, and because to me, boxing is when you see boxing, someone's out there, it's who you are, and someone's character, you're seeing it out there, laying it on the line in front of everybody, and it's as rare as, you know, naked form. That's what I love about boxing.
Yeah, it's definitely. Now, what's your ultimate goal as a boxer?
To become a world champion. Bottom line, every kid that first walks into a gym, they see the writer on TV and they dream of becoming a world champion. I want to have that belt around their waist too.
Fighters
today that I look up to, is that what you're saying? I'm hearing a lot of muffling. Not everything's coming out clear.
Yeah, Tony's a little back and forth tonight. He was doing good. But, can you repeat the question, Tony?
Sorry.
Oh, your name's Tony too?
Yeah. Tony.
Oh, okay.
I can give him a proper introduction. We call him Tony the Tornado Panical. We also call him the Rain Man of boxing.
Okay, right on. So, my favorite fighters today that I look up to, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, favorite fighters today and then favorite fighters of all time.
Oh, okay. Of today, Manny Pacquiao, just based on his background, where he came from. This guy literally came from the gutter, a guy who had to eat his own dog to survive, you know, and to where he is now, I mean, that's just a testament, an example of will, you know, someone's will and heart, you know, to get out of those circumstances. He never felt sorry for himself, and he found a way to make it happen. And of all time, I'd say, you know, Muhammad Ali, obviously, I think that's on everyone's list. For what he did inside the ring and for what he stood for. Sugar Ray Leonard, obviously, for, you know, his style and grace. I looked up to those guys a lot. Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roy Jones in his heyday. Those were all fighters that I enjoyed watching and looked up to when I was growing up.
We had you on the line when we had Roy Jones Jr. on a couple weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
That was a big interview for us. Somebody had suggested and he had a fight coming up, so it worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
Was that fight, by the way?
No, I know. I found it somewhere.
And he's a fast talker, though. Sometimes it was hard to understand.
A fast talker? Yeah.
Fights like he punches. I mean, he talks like he fights.
He talks like he punches, exactly, yeah. Everything at high speed.
Hey, Rich, you know why he won that fight this past weekend, right?
Because you gave him the heads up on his opponent.
Because I gave him a scouting report on his opponent.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think it would have mattered.
I actually covered him a few times, and I know him from the Philadelphia area.
Yeah.
And he was a very good opponent for Roy. He was a guy that was very deliberate. You know, he doesn't do a whole lot of things really fast. He's not a big puncher. I think he was going to be the type of guy that, you know, Roy was going to, you know, be able to use his to keep it out. Concerned about his punching power in return.
You're talking about his last fight, Max Alexander?
No, Max Alexander.
Yeah, I mean, compared to Roy's resume, Max is very green, and he was also out of shape. And, they're both at their stage in a career where he doesn't really pose a threat to Roy Jones, even at Roy's age. And Roy wasn't in the best shape either. You know, Roy doesn't belong at cruiserweight. It was obviously a key busy fight, something to get him back on his feet again, and with someone who's not going to give him too much resistance, but still give him some rounds and give the fans a show. You know, that's what I took from it.
Well, being a Pacquiao fan, we got to ask you, who do you think would win this so-called super fight that may never happen between Pacquiao?
I got the edge to Mayweather. I've always given the edge to Mayweather, but just based on his overall ability and superior technique, you know, especially on the defensive end. Pacquiao has a hard time with counterpunches, as you saw with Marquez. Pacquiao excels when a guy comes to him and is looking to mix it up, and he just picks you apart with the speed and, and power, obviously. With a guy like Mayweather, he's going to have to, he's not comfortable coming forward having to chase the guy. And that's the problem that Floyd is going to pose to him. Now, in the long haul, though, I think, in a 12-round fight, if Pacquiao can manage to push the pace and find a target, he might catch up to Mayweather in the later rounds. And with the southpaw style, Mayweather has problems with southpaws. And he can match his speed. So as long as Pacquiao's not too reckless, to wear Mayweather down the stretch, who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more even going into it than people realize. Because, you know, Marquez did give him a little trouble, but... You know, they fought four times now.
Three times.
I always do that. I did that last week, too. Riddick Bowe. We had Riddick Bowe on as he fought only two times.
I read that, too. I really was thinking of coming back.
Yeah. He was kind of with Evander Holyfield. For number four. That was the four I was thinking of. But, yeah, they fought.
I'm having a hard time hearing you guys.
They fought enough times, Pacquiao and
Pacquiao and Marquez? Yeah, I mean, you know what? you're never going to see you're going to see the same fight every time. I mean, you're, not that I'm complaining, though, because every time Pacquiao and Marquez get together, it's fire anyway.
Right.
You can't go wrong with those two.
Because that one was so close, now I guess Bob Arum is itching to do a fourth one on that. And he's just, you know, not listening to reason on some of these offers going back and forth on Mayweather because he feels like he needs that last money fight, I think, under his belt. He wants a better performance on Manny's behalf, I think, before going into the fight.
I mean, yeah, you know what, if I was Bob, I think that it would just—it's just a matter of, you know, fight math doesn't always work. You know, like Mayweather took Marquez apart. Marquez is also, you know, very bloated. Looked at the smaller man in there against Floyd, but styles make fights. I mean, you know, I think Marquez is just always going to have a style that's going to give Manny trouble, and I don't think it might not necessarily have anything to do with how successful Manny would be against Floyd Mayweather. Styles make fights. But for, you know what, you want to go back. Like the trilogy and Ali, you know, Ken Norton always gave Ali problems. Ken Norton gets destroyed by Foreman. Ali goes and knocks out Foreman. You know, the fight math doesn't work. You know, Tommy Hearns wrecks Roberto Duran in two rounds, and you know, Leonard has a trilogy with Duran. You know, and it went the distance every time, with the exception of the rematch. But so you can't, to me, I wouldn't base Manny's success against Floyd on how good with Marquez.
Right.
The whole different fight altogether.
It seems like they're just auditioning for each other. They have so many comments on it. But I don't know. I think it's just, there's so much hype behind it, and there's so much riding on whether it's going to be a successful fight, even. You know, who knows? Maybe it's just a romp one way or another, and nobody.
I don't think that's possible. Yeah.
So I think they feel like they have to have it on the most perfect conditions possible. And everybody has to make $100 million. I don't know how it's going to happen. But I think if it does, it'll be this year. So we'll see.
And you know what? If Manny and Mayweather doesn't happen this year, then I don't think it's ever going to happen, which is a shame because, A, there's so much money to be made at peace with both these guys. And B, for the fans, like, whether or not it turns out to be the super fight that it's being hyped up to be, I mean, it's, at least for a little while anyway, it'll put boxing back on the map again, and it'll come alive. This is a fight that'll bring not just the boxing fans, but the mainstream sports fans in to watch, you know? So that's, to me, it's a damn shame if the promoters and the fighters don't get their heads together and make it happen. It's too bad.
Way that it is. You're missing Manny Floyd is by putting out that May 15th. If he doesn't take it, it's still not too late to do it in December. You know, maybe the Christmas present for everybody. And it gives him one more fight to audition. So maybe
it's not too late for what? What, this December?
Yeah. Well, next December, no.
Next December, yeah. Well, I know Floyd is coming back in May, though, right?
Right. Definitely.
They haven't had an opponent for him yet, though?
But no opponent is there. And I think it's a ploy to get Manny into discussions. Manny's gone on all these talk shows and said he's ready. So it makes sense that the only holdup is Bob Arum.
Yeah.
He's
agreed to all the random drug testing and everything, you know, and... Well, you know what happened? He finally agreed to that, you know, drug testing, you know, getting tested and all that. And then Floyd goes and moves the goalpost again and wants it, like, right up until, you know, just a day or two before the fight. I don't blame Manny. I would have said no, too.
Yeah.
You know? But that was, you know, that was just that's a battle of egos right there. Because you know what? A big fight like that, the real fight starts not in the ring but at the negotiating table. You know, and that's what was going on there.
And a friend of mine who's a noted boxing trainer, who's been on the show a few times, man, John Stanley, brought up a very good point. When does Floyd Mayweather decide that he has more power than the sanctioning body? And when does he become more powerful than the athletic commission?
And You know what? I'm really having a hard time understanding you because your voice keeps echoing on the machine or whatever, and it's really coming out muffled to me. I'm not getting it. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
When did Floyd Mayweather?
Yeah, I can hear you, but your voice is really, there's nothing you can do about the echo. Your voice is really echoing off of the machine or whatever it is, but it's not coming.
Let's try to call you back real quick. Sometimes that cures it.
You're gonna call me back?
Right back, yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, sometimes we get an echo. I can't hear it on my end. But sometimes when we reconnect the call, it fixes it.
Hello.
How's that? Any better?
That's a little bit better.
All right. Tony, go ahead.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, I can hear you better now.
Okay. My question was, I was talking to noted boxing trainer, Iceman John Scully. We've had him on our show a few times.
Yeah, what's that?
You know Iceman?
Yeah, I do. I'm friends with Russ Amber, and Russ Amber is part of my team. And he, in the amateurs, I fought on a show of his down in Connecticut. I beat
okay.
the state champs down there. So yeah, I know John well.
Yeah. John's a great guy, and he's very knowledgeable about boxing, and he brings
yeah.
a very, knowledgeable take to a lot of, points. And the
yeah.
one thing he said to us a few months ago, the last time we interviewed him, was when did Floyd Mayweather become bigger than the sanctioning bodies and the athletic commission,
mm-hmm.
where he is now dictating to them what kind of tests he wants? I mean...
I agree wholeheartedly. I know, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I don't see where he, obviously he's along with Pacquiao, he's the face of boxing right now, and it's just his ego that's put him there to develop that kind of mentality. I agree. Not much else I can really say. I'm on John with that. He shouldn't have that kind of power.
That's funny. I went to a open workout of his in Las Vegas before the Ortiz
mm-hmm.
fight.
Yeah.
And he's still harping on that. So he's getting sued over, all the stuff that he said about Pacquiao being on steroids. That's all unfounded. And he's in the middle of his workout. And he says right out loud, if you want to fight the best, you got to take the tests. So he's not saying it that he's, on steroids, but he's kind of implying it still. Even while he's being sued.
I know. I think Mayweather's just at a point right now in his life where he's,
all about the drama.
Everything. I think he's at a point where he doesn't really value money the way normal people do. He just doesn't seem, nothing seems to be just lawsuits and criminal charges one after another, what he owes to the IRS, and he just doesn't care. He thinks the ride is going to last forever. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes whenever boxing is lost.
Right. We'll see. It's kind of funny when you we had an intro a few weeks ago of a radio station call-in that Mayweather did when Nelson was talking about him. And, he just hears something on the radio, and he's riding around with 50 Cent in New York City, and he ends up calling the guy, Brandon Raven, and,
yeah.
guy did duck it. Funny call. But getting back to you, is anybody out there, you're ready to fight next? Do you have anything in the works, or somebody?
Nothing. No names yet. Yeah.
Does anybody want to fight out there?
We don't have any set opponents lined up yet. But my next fight in Montreal is only going to be in April, but we're looking to get one in the States or anywhere really before then, obviously. But in terms of Canadian guys at 140, there's Pierre Olivier Cote. But right now he's a little bit older than me, and his promoter Vinoboff are starting to give him a big push now. But that's a fight down the road that could develop, and that could be something that would be fireworks to have here in Canada. Me and him one day hooking up. That's one guy that I have on my radar though, in the future.
What's his name?
again?
Pierre Olivier Forte. He just fought on Showtime on a cool feature. He's going to be headlining Showbox in February.
Okay.
He knocked out Jorge Luis Toro in 2 rounds.
Oh, wow. You want to fight this guy?
Yeah, why wouldn't I want to fight him?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's, you definitely want to test yourself.
Well, that's, you know, that's what boxing is about, though. That's what, you should want to fight the best, you know, and the, you know, guys that are out there. I mean, if you don't have that kind of mentality, you're not going to get very far in the sport.
Right. So if you're one of those guys who wants to pick record to get to 30 and 0. You're gonna go right to the top.
Sorry, say that again. I can't hear you that well.
Oh, it sounds like you're not one of those guys that's gonna just, you know, have your record with cost to get to 30. You're gonna
go right
to the tough guys and
stay
undefeated. That's pretty
impressive. Okay, all I heard was sounds like some guy was gonna pad my record and.
Yeah, you keep breaking up here. I don't know. Can you hear us any better now?
I can hear you better now, yeah.
Right. Basically, I was saying, you're not the guy that's going to pad record to go 30-0. You're going to go right through all the tough guys, one after the other.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, when you first start out your career, you know, you are fighting, you know, I mean, some hand-pick opponents and guys that just to give you some rounds and, you know, make you look good, just to develop and get a feel for the pro game. But as you clear naturally progress, the opposition slowly gets different. I mean, there is an art to matchmaking, and it's about taking the right fight at the right time. At a certain point, you do have to step up, and, you know, everything in its right time is good. And, you know, 23, I've still got my whole career ahead of me. I'm in no rush.
All right. Oh, we got your information from Matt Yanofsky. So I wanted to just kind of mention a couple of things that he passed on to me. He says you speak two languages and you work with troubled youth full time. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I speak English and French and some broken Portuguese and the bad words in Greek. I'm half Portuguese and half Greek. And I work at a drug treatment center on an Indian reservation, just on the outskirts of my hometown, and it's interesting work. It's intense.
Yeah.
But it's rewarding. It's rewarding at the same time, though. Yeah.
I can sort of relate. I had a job once at an alternative high school,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very small group of kids that we could pretty much control. It was a funny, weird behavior, but. You know, sometimes it comes from the most unexpected places. There's this one time I'm sitting in a room with this kid who got thrown out of class, and he's just sitting there peacefully, quiet, and the next thing you know, he gets up and throws a desk across the room. desk, you know, and this kid's not even athletic. It just kind of freaked me out, but, they're volatile.
I experienced that with my job too. You know, a lot of times my job can be, you know, pretty easy, just cruising, just playing chef, counselor, big brother, you know, and then every once in a while, you know, the littlest thing can trigger a kid, and they just blow up, and then it really becomes work, and sometimes you go, you know, above and beyond the call of duty, but that comes with the territory.
And did you have any role models inside or outside the sport growing up?
Any role models in what?
Inside or outside the sport of boxing when you were growing up? That helped you out a lot?
On a personal level, you mean?
Yeah.
Obviously my father. That's number one. He's my trainer and manager, and he was the man who taught me how to fight and gave me every opportunity in the world. Number one, and then after that, I've met a lot of good contacts, a lot of good friends. Obviously, Russ Amber to me is family, and he's always done a lot to help out and to help out my dad in developing me and just being there for us as a friend too, not just coach. But not a lot of good people in the sport of boxing.
All right. Do you have any final thoughts or anybody you want to give a shout out to before we let you go back to work there?
Well, just anybody who's listening or, you know, any fans out there that do happen to know me and, you know, are following me, just we're going to continue just, I'm staying in the gym. I'm in shape, onwards and upwards. I can't wait to fight again. And that's it. We're looking for bigger and better things. I want 2012 to be, you know, to be another good year for us. One step closer to my dream.
All right. Well, I just want to let everybody know too that our buddy over there, what's his name, Matty from Knockout Publicity's, asked me to write a little bit of an article on you too, Tony. So.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Look for that on the next couple of days. I think I'll get it done by the end of the weekend. It's been great chatting with you.
Right on. Oh, it's gonna.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's gonna be on the site in a couple of days. You said.
Yeah, but by Monday morning, we'll say. I'll get it done over the weekend for sure.
Okay, sounds good. What's your website again? Fight News Unlimited.
Yes, that's the formal name. It's fightnewsunlimited.com or unlimitedfightnews.com. Either way works.
Oh, okay.
And to listen to the interview again, you can go to fightradio.info. Brings you right to our Blog Talk Radio area.
And that's going to be, and that'll be Monday morning-ish, maybe.
The article will be. The show is available right after we're done. So if you want to share it with people on Facebook or whatever, just send.
Oh, okay, cool, man.
Fightradio.info.
Yeah, sounds good.
Tonight's
show. Oh, thanks for the chat. This was fun, man.
Yeah, you're a good guest.
I can talk boxing all day.
we'll keep track of that. We'll be on at a later date. Maybe we'll have you preview the fight when it actually is going to happen. Maybe by the Pacquiao, since it's a
sounds good
subject.
All right, sounds good, man.
Right.
Keep in touch. Okay, bye.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
So there you have it. That's Tony Luis. He's 13-0, 5 KOs, and doesn't know who he's going to fight next, but he wants to fight some tough guys, so tough guy himself. Something you know, Tony, so you probably know a little bit better than I do about how tough he really is.
Well, I mean, the fighting guy with Aldo Vieira, I mean, that's just something right there. Aldo's a very good fighter, very tough fighter. Like I said, he's a poor man's margarita almost. You know, very straightforward. You know, uses his good chin as a best way of defense. So,
well, we've given you your share of boxing over the last 3 weeks now. I think we're going to try to end this week. Unfortunately, try. we're gonna have to switch gears eventually. But for the rest of the show tonight, I'm just going to cover some news. I do want to get a little bit of MMA side of things into the broadcast as well. We still have to talk about the rest of the UFC 140 card. We got on that call talking about Frank Mir beat Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira by submission. He thought the arm got broke anyway. That's the first time Nogueira, has ever been submitted at all. And his brother, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, won earlier in the night. And that was a really good fight because he beat Tito Ortiz. Crumpled up into the position. It was just popping. And very rarely in MMA do you see a fight stopped because of a body shot. It just doesn't happen. And here goes Antonio Rosero Nogueira, comes in there and just punishes Tito. And actually, it started with a knee to the body from the seat. Ended up on the ground. And Nogueira was just throwing hooks left and right to the body like crazy. And actually, you know, as much as I talk about I'll never do MMA, that's one thing when I always watch MMA, I know that I can do better than most people. It's, you know, throw body shots on the ground. Because I find myself always in the street fight, first in the ribs. It's happening. On the ground or on the feet, either way, it's happening. But Nogueira just plowed through Ortiz. And Ortiz had one more fight left on his contract, so there's probably no risk of him getting thrown out or quitting at this point. But the ideal fight for him, he said, is Forrest Griffin. If Forrest Griffin came out this week and said that he's kind of near the end himself, so who knows? That could be their final, both of them, retirement fight, if that happens at all. We also have some other results from that card. Pretty interesting. We had Brian Ebersole beat Claude Patrick by a split decision. That was a real back and forth fight. Ebersole has a really unconventional style. In the knockout of the night, it had to be because it was only 7 seconds into the first round, Chan Sung Jung beat Mark Hominick, who everybody was talking about as the second coming of Jesus Christ earlier in the week before the fight. Chan Sung Jung comes out and knocks him out in 7 seconds. Right across the gate. Boom. Out. So that was sort of an interesting aspect of this whole card. We're getting to watch that. But then some of the preliminary fights, we had Igor Pokrzak beats Krzysztof Sosninski, also by first round knockout to punches. None of those guys are, huge superstars or anything, but they were very evenly matched. They were right away slugging it out, and Pokrzak got the better of Sosninski. That was all she wrote. We had knockouts from punches. Konstantinos Filippou beat Jared Hammond, first round knockout at the 3:11 mark. We had Dennis Hallman, won by Roerdyk Choke Submission over John McDessie. That was 3 minutes almost into the first round. Then we had Eve Jabouin beat Wallell Watson by split decision. And the last decision of the night was Mark Bocek versus Nick Lentz. Bocek won by unanimous decision. Guy I met at an event in Worcester, Massachusetts back in 2010, Rich Patinito, was on the losing end of a fight with Jake Hecht. And it was elbows and punches that knocked him out. Antonito was doing all right. He was hanging in there, but just sort of a little bit outclassed by Jake, but still lived to fight another day in the UFC, I think. He was on one of the Ultimate Fighter episodes. Got a busted hand, even though he was winning in the show and couldn't compete. But he stuck around, and they did get a few fights. And some person, I thought there might have been a chance we could have interviewed him, but I don't remember if we actually did. He had a lot of guys like that that either materialized or they didn't. But, Rich Antonito didn't have a good day. And finally, the last fight was John Cholish versus Mitch Clark. Mitch Clark lost by knockout in round two. There was about 24 seconds left in the round when he was put out. And of course, we have the big end of the year fight next on the UFC roster here. Between Alistair Overeem and Brock Lesnar to close out the year. And speaking of, we had the Brady Bunch intro thing. I saw something like that on YouTube. It's pretty funny. Brock Hunt. If you go to our website and you watch that parody, or any website, and you see that parody of the UFC Bunch, look for the Brock Hunt one too. It's kind of funny. It's parody of Duck Hunt with Brock in the starring role. And it's got all his classic quotes in there, like Frank Mir had a horseshoe up his ass, and I pulled that fuck up and hit him over the head with it. It's kind of funny. It's got the Duck Hunt graphics, of course. And, things you can do with computers these days. Very nice.
But anyway, yeah, Brock Lesnar versus Alex Overeem.
I think that's going to be a better fight than Dos Santos versus Velasquez was. And, you know, it's perfect timing into the year, December 30th there, to close out the season for the UFC. It's been a big year for them. And we'll be talking more about that next week. There is some other news, of course. Here's a good one. Pretty controversial. You know, these guys that end up in the UFC, they have fame wherever they go. And however they do, it seems, when they leave the UFC. Just on, you know, the fact that they were on the Ultimate Fighter or had some association with the UFC. So here's this guy, Junie Browning. And he's over in Thailand. And he's no stranger to getting himself in trouble. The last offense, I guess, was harassing some nurses in Nevada. But to the media over there in Thailand, he was seen beating up a woman in a bar and also reacted harshly when other female workers tried to break up the fight. The fight then continued at a local hospital where Browning was being treated for his injuries. And then he fled the hospital on Sunday and has not been seen since. The police are currently staking out the Phuket International Airport in hopes of cutting off Browning if he attempts to leave the country. And he actually tweeted, no, he didn't tweet, he sent a Facebook update about the events. He wrote, wow, what a hell of a weekend. Some expletive named C. Menzies and about 10 of his friends start a fight with me. I guess just to test the UFC fighter guy at this expletive little bar in Thailand. Had a beer bottle and glass mug shattered on them to make everything better. Stabbed severely by some crazy Thai blank. On a positive note, I managed to break a few orbital bones, at least a couple jaws, and some unconscious bodies laying on the ground before I blacked out from loss of blood. Apparently, had to be resuscitated in the ambulance. So, how was your weekend? Sounds like he had a pretty wild time. I don't know if he embellished a little bit about the damage that he did, but looks like the authorities have a different story than he does. But I don't think he's going to volunteer himself anytime soon. Sounds like he's in a lot of trouble. And in countries like that where you don't know the law and how it works, it's not good to be in trouble. I think he's making a run for the border. Here's a little crossover story. Comparing boxing and MMA. As you may or may not know, Freddie Roach is actually doing a lot of training with some of the fighters out there in the MMA, namely George St. Pierre. And somebody caught up with him recently and asked him who's the best pure boxer in MMA. Actually injured right now. Even though some people are claiming.
Was
there
an ACL or something?
Yeah, something bad. But I think actually with him getting older, surgery. So it was the ACL, but Anderson Silva's got it. Anderson Silva is the best boxer in the MMA. So that was out there this week. We got Chick coming up next Saturday, right?
What's that?
The Super Six finale. Is that coming up this Saturday? That's a big fight. Boxing's coming up too. We got a tap.
I think I'm worse than that. I think he's just too good of a boxer. Roach is just, I mean, he's a tough, aggressive, you know, pressure. But, I mean, if famous fighters like Jermaine Taylor were able to land successfully on Roach, then I don't see why Andre Ward is superior boxer, superior, you know.
Yeah, and see what if Ward got cut in the sparring session. With headgear on, which might say something about the chances that Frotch can open him up a little bit early factor, but it could go either way. I haven't really followed it. It's not one of those gimmicks that caught on with me because I don't have Showtime, so. So much more MMA these days than boxing. Even though sometimes the MMA guys put it on their board. They put the boxing matches on their board so you can watch them after the fact. But they link to it if it's a big fight. In the same place where I find my UFC fights. But, I don't know. I just wonder if it turns out to be a good fight. They got rid of the link before it, so. Anyway, there's another story here before we get to the open up this week. Are concussions a feature in MMA? It's a pretty interesting article over at MMA Weekly. And we talked about this a couple times. I went into a study that was done that I don't have the full details on ever when we talk about it. But what was the study done right about it? Saying there's more per capita concussions in MMA than there are in boxing. But for pro football, long-term effects of concussions also can become a real issue. UFC president Dana White, UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones, New York Frank, he talked about it recently at a press conference, and I'm just going to play a little bit of a clip of what they said about the issue. I don't think this really caught up, talked about all that much in the media until I found this one. So I thought it was pretty cool, too. Actually, he invited us in, Dana White, talk about it. He's some pretty big guys, too. John Jones, physically, and they can take over to you. But we'll get back to that. And Dana's also talking about, speaking of Dana White and Tito Ortiz, Dana said that he's encouraging Tito's retirement. He has before that just had about two more fights left in the future, so I'll try to get a contract when his next fight, whoever it is. Who knows? You know, the guy is... want to be the Huntington Beach bad boy anymore. He changed his nickname. I forget the two. Ortiz is getting ready to be a fan. He made enough money off the sport. He has a pretty big image in the media, so I'm sure he can figure out what to do. If the UFC doesn't hire him, like this is Chuck Liddell, he can find something to make money. But he's one of the only guys who has been in the UFC from day one. You know, like he didn't come through. He's always fought in the UFC. And actually, so he said it. He didn't even know it's true. He's not lying. He's been there and done that. Let's get back to concussions. Freddie Roach talking about George St. Peter's injury and boxing skill. Alright, that's going to be a slow pop tonight. Awesome. Do you know anybody down the Andre Ward fights? Yes, that's a deep hole going on there, buddy.
Also has a winner of the month now. He is 25 out of 17 knockouts. He is fighting Luis Galarza. This is 17-2 knockout. That has the potential to be kind of exciting. Stay right next to me, you know. And for the big fights on the card, I really looked at that. Edison on the card, fighting an 8-rounder now at light heavyweight. Brand new, a hot shot prospect a few years ago until Kelly Pavlin pretty much ruined. Edison is reminding me of a story that I'll be growing up. A guy had been, they were like, you know, adolescent, like, you know, 12, 13 years old. And this guy happened to be known as Jersey Gilwell. Obviously, had him at Jersey Gilwell class. So everybody was kind of afraid of this guy. You know, and he had a reputation of a badass and everything. So then my dad and all his, you know, honestly, they used to have, like, graduates with them all there. And my dad, he was pretty much, and my dad was like, oh, man, he's been the first guy to tangle with Jersey Gilwell, man. So my dad is the one that gets picked to do it. Like, I don't know if he volunteered or he gets picked to do it. And he admitted, he's like, man, I go out there. And he goes, I was kind of afraid, you know, I'm fucking crazy. No, he's supposed to be a badass. So he said, and I just snapped off a jab. And he goes, bitch. And then, where's that? If I was to this, everybody would have come. That's what kind of reminds me of Edison Moore. Shit out of everybody. You know, Miranda was, you know, tearing guys apart and, you know, beating guys up pretty bad. And then Kelly Powell kicked his ass. Was like, well, shit, everybody wanted a piece of Miranda after that.
I think he had one of his last fights in college. Yeah. And he was sitting right next to the photographer for WN Deportes and some shit. And he got one of those big ass, you know, that it's digital. You can immediately, after you take the picture, you can look at it. And I think it was like between pictures. After that fight, he comes right over to me and shows me the picture. It's a supposed low blow that broke the camera and struck Yale's back. And, and the guy's like, see? And it's above the belt line. He got called for it. It looked low because the guy had his shorts really high. You know, caught him right in the lower stomach, you know. Might have grazed the belt, but it definitely did not go low.
in the fight. Harry would have given him the card that night.
If it wasn't for the controversy, it even made his when he saw him in the hallway.
After the fight. I don't know. It's what it is. Yeah, he's always been a good fighter. He's just had trouble lately. Let's see. Andre Ward and Carl Franch, that's a good fight. Because they certainly done a lot of PR on it, you know. Obviously because they had the extra time. They've had more press conferences and more fight. You know, but they really like it. Because they've been in this tournament for so long. And, you know, they've been hanging out at DC even though they had to beat each other up. Probably developed a great working relationship. Who knows? Seems like forever ago this thing started, though. Like, I don't know the exact date, but it seems like it was like 3 years to go to the end. It's been a while. And that's what you get when you have some boxes. The tournament modeled after it that just finished. Up with Marquez there, and then Beko took forever. And then Fraser put her off, controversy, made her hand as possible. So, you never can tell how these things are going to work out. So, I think that's up here, so let's see what else. The USPA welterweight title on the line tonight in Oakland, Remington Park. We've got Carson Jones, 32-8, 22 draws, fighting Ricardo Williams Jr., who's 19-2, 10 knockouts. Pretty good fight there. Danny McDermott fighting in New Jersey, Abraham. That's not really that much of a why I read that one. Forget that. Or don't forget it if you're going. You can still go. Dana Argentina is an interesting type. Fight for the art students of Eduardo Moli, 20 knockouts. Fighting Sebastian Ignacio Sabalos, he's 29-6. 22 knockouts, 2 draws. And there's only one other fight on the card. Everybody else is fighting TBA, tough guy. Emilio Ezequiel Zarate is a heavyweight. He's fighting a 6-rounder, 27, 6 knockouts, 2 draws. He's fighting Facundo Smile. He's 10-0, 3 knockouts. In Argentina tomorrow, that fight's going on tomorrow. What else do we have? Fernando Angulo fighting this weekend in Argentina as well. Oh, on Friday, actually, tomorrow. He's beat Naka Tricio and Pedrero, who's 3-1 draw, 13 knockouts. But he injured them, WBC. Fast. France, 6 rounds.
lightweight fight, Yan Zhuo next, fighting Jixian, who's 21-16. So one draw, six knockouts. Friday, the team's going on Saturday, and then the underboard crawl for Huxley. Is there anybody we missed over the end to Anthony, Amir, Tony? Is there anything over the weekend that we missed that we haven't talked about that you know of?
I got to work again this weekend. Did a couple of storm gigs coming up this weekend, so very busy man. It's a good thing. Money to fun. If your boy Vinny has his birthday tomorrow, you can send him a Facebook message.
Alright. Yeah, we got to get the R-rated show done, too. He promised us that.
We do. We really do. I got to see if it's still operational. I don't know if we're going to damage it in the floor.
Uh-oh. Well, you know, I guess now that Rick Bowe wants to fight me. We'll see. Anyway, we do have more Friday night fights. I apologize. This is going to be Saturday. Another Friday night fight. It's pretty big. And on my blog stories, these guys have been sending me about tomorrow night in Mandalay Bay Resort Casino out in Vegas. We got a 12-rounder middleweights Marco Antonio Rubio, 52-5 with 45 knockouts, one draw. He's fighting Matt, who's 44-13 with 24 knockouts. To the Vacant WBC Latino middleweight title. So there's a couple other decent cards. Big fights on this card. Featherweights, Javier Fortuna, 17-0, 13 knockouts. Bill Ross, 37-8 knockouts for the WBC Intercontinental Featherweight title. We got the WBC Nobel on the line. Bill Cosio, draws 9 knockouts, fighting Ronnie Warrior Jr., 13-5, 1 draw, North Bay title on the fight card, into WC Seeker Box, like middleweight title, and somebody's always got to go in this one. Samuel Rogers, 10-0, with 5 knockouts against Jamar Freeman, 9-0. Draws and 5 knockouts. And there's actually another undefeated couple of guys fighting each other for another WBC World Light Middleweight title. Another between John Jackson, 11-0, 10th, and Keandra Leatherwood, who's 9-0, 6 knockouts. So that should be a good card there. Probably. Where's New York, Pennsylvania?
Well, that is close to Harrisburg. Yeah, probably about 2 miles.
There's another event there. Nothing big on. Just curious to know.
If
you're up in New York, there's a fight card somewhere in town tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you what it's all. Go to Box Rec if you want to find out. All right, we're into Saturday for real now. The vacant NABA welterweight on the line between Kevin Bisier, 16-0, fighting Leonardo, 25-5-2, 15 knockouts, he can be sectional between Janine Dakari, 7 knockouts, but Victor Lubowski, 19-1-2 with 9 knockouts. It's tough to tell they put this card to qualify, but the main event here is listed as light welterweights Zapir Razulov, who's 23-0 with 21 knockouts, fighting the game Eason and Biffar, who is 3-14. He's only been knocked out once. He's only had one knockout. Knocked out 7. Rico's 11-1-1 at welterweight, fighting against Joseph Holu, who's 1-43 with 1 draw. From Sonora, Mexico on Saturday. A couple big fights here. On the card, featherweights and featherweight fight Luis Alito, 36-11 with 2 draws, 24 knockouts, fighting Wing Haya, who's 14-4 with 8 knockouts. Also with 2 draws and also with 19 knockouts. So we'll see how that one goes. And you said Librado Andrade is fighting this weekend. That's also in Mexico. That's fighting against Don George, who's 22-1. Andrade is 30 wins, 4 losses, 83 knockouts.
What that better fighter, you know?
He likes that guy, huh?
Yeah.
You know, let's see what we get to round out Saturday for boxing. Let's pop right back up the top again. Getting all of the world results here. Lost in Massachusetts. Nothing too huge here, but as for the vacant USA New England title, Dara is 5-0 with 2 knockouts by Beeman. It's 4-10-3 with 2 knockouts. I think that name sounds familiar, the Josh Beeman. He does too. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. Oklahoma Fox TV. We've got a super bantamweight main event between Robert Maroon, 21-1, 14 knockouts, and Kyle Carso, who's 12-3, 5 knockouts. That's all the way through today. Nothing really big going on Sunday. Across the world here. But we promise to give you some videos that pretty roach, I think, pretty old. And then we're going to go back to the concussion deal. That loads my computer.
Yeah. Still talking.
No. They're saying the standing income sucks, basically.
Yeah,
in boxing.
There's two trains of thought on it. Like the standing eight count, like an amateur that like just gets caught with a couple clean shots and they count on them. Were they talking about when, you know, the person is held up by the ropes and shit? And practically they're going down, the only thing to hold them up, the person should be counted on because it should be a legitimate knockdown. Now, if a person gets hit with two or three clean shots and they're stunned, no, I don't, favor count. Because basically, I mean, you're taking a point away from them by doing that. I am not a fan of the, I am a favor of the mandatory eight count when a fighter gets knocked down. Like, I know back in the days when Dempsey was champ, you know, he was able to get up and he was just knocking the hell right back down before the guy's gloves barely got off the ground. I like the fact that we'll give the guy an eight count, look in his eyes, make sure he is suitable to continue, and then let the fight resume.
Well,
we can slow down.
We're running towards the end of the show right here. About 8 minutes of official time left, so I think we're going to call this game early. Sayonara. And thank you to Tony Luis and the other Tony, of course, my co-host, Tony Tornado Pinnacle. Everybody send them a farewell card on Facebook. That's feeling like shit.
I'll be okay, man. I'm going to work this weekend. If you say anything with the party, I'll be okay, man, as long as I can breathe.
All right. And we might find another boxing guest for you next week to continue the Chris theme for Tony. But, definitely fit in Monday.
Did you tell my Facebook friends and Brendan Rodgers?
Say that again?
Did you become a Facebook friend with Brittany Rogers?
I probably did.
I talked to her this week.
All right. Yeah, we'll have her on next week. But as soon as we know, you will know about our next guest next week.
She was going to be looking out in Vegas when I told her to go back to enjoy her vacation.
I could have met her in person if I stuck it out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, till next week, we're going to say see ya. Thanks to Cocaine Energy Drink, MarijuanaMuscle.com. Check them out. It's hemp, all natural hemp protein. DrinkCocaine.com for Cocaine Energy Drink. ZionShop.com is even though I'm suing Zions. also, check out FCFighter.com. Over the next few days, they're going to have an interview with me, posted some kind of story about Zion, so that's going to be out there. And check out the website over the next few days as well. I make a promise right here, the Ring Girl contest done by the end of the weekend. For winter now, we're into winter, skip to season. We're supposed to be doing it seasonally now. It went from summer right to winter, because that's pretty much what it's doing in the Northeast. And that's it. That's all we got. So thanks for stopping by. All
right. Long as you're doing next week. Hopefully I'll be a little bit more coherent and reading better. And we'll see.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Get your Christmas shopping done.
All right.